Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. This week I'm joined by Joe Tomlinson and Zach Jalab. Zach, how are you doing, my friends?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah, not too bad. Thank you very much, yourself.
Yeah, I'm good. I thought we could, let's kick off by having a little reflection on the Champions League last night. Joe, we finally saw it, a Messi goal. How enjoyable was that for you?
Yeah, that was a class game. I mean, the quality of player on that pitch was absolutely absurd. I'll be honest with you, though, I wasn't that impressed by PSG. I thought they lacked a real identity, and I think going forward, I know they scored two goals, but I wasn't overly convinced. Manchester City, obviously still missing that striker, but I thought they were the better team, Man City. 2-0 definitely flattered PSG, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Zach, did you see that Sheriff Tiraspol Thunderbolt?
Jesus Christ, what a strike. I mean, any Real Madrid mud is something that I am thoroughly going to enjoy. No. To come at the hands of them. Fair play to the Moldovan team. Yeah, wonderful strike. And then I think they went and posted the highlights of their game to their YouTube channel and didn't have the rights or something like that as well.
Yeah. Or posted an illegal one. One of the two.
That is so good. That is crazy. The guy who scored the winner, I was reading, played for a Russian side that dissolved last season. They don't even exist, the team he was playing for.
Some goal, though.
Though, did you see his tattoo as well? Did you see he has a tattoo of him dreaming about playing in the Champions League?
No. Wow.
Yeah. And so, what a day for them, man. Fair play to them. They're gonna win the group.
Yeah. Sheriff are almost out of the group. It's unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, big night for football as well. Just quickly, actually, we'll pick up on what we're talking about before. I saw Sam, obviously, I could get involved in a tweet which said, Salah has surpassed Gerrard as Liverpool's greatest player, by the way. Sam called it a crazy statement. Obviously, he performed, he was back on it alongside Curtis Jones yesterday against Porto. I mean, Joe, obviously, some pretty wild stuff on Twitter in our time, but where does that stand for you?
I mean, I would probably have Kenny Dalglish ahead of Steven Gerrard anyway. But yeah, I think there's more to Steven Gerrard than just ability, isn't there? Like, obviously a fantastic player, but what he did at the club, staying at the club, sticking by the club, playing so consistently for so many years. I think Salah's still got some way to go, in my opinion.
I don't think it's as big though as maybe when I first read the tweet. Like, when you think about what Salah's done since. He's been there, obviously won them the Champions League, won them their first Premier League title, broken the goal record in the Premier League. It's so consistent every single year for them. I don't think it's as far, but I would also agree. I mean, Gerrard, obviously being a local lad as well, and having supported them since he was a kid, kind of adds to it. But I don't think it's a million miles away. I really don't.
I don't know. I think Salah's got a lot of work to do to catch up with the legacy that Steven Gerrard's left behind. Personally, I think you can't. I mean, a lot of people, any sort of long-term legend at a club holds sort of really special status. Which I think, if you want to know more about that, go check out Joe's We Need to Talk, which is sort of long-running members of clubs recently. Anyway, for this episode, we are going to look at managers under pressure in the Premier League. It's sort of like a Nuno, I suppose, inspired podcast. What I've done is I've taken the top seven managers, according to the odds at the moment, that are facing the chop. And they're in order of how we're going to talk about them. So starting with Steve Bruce. Joe, first and foremost, are you shocked to see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's name not included in the top seven managers expected to get the chop sometime soon?
I'm slightly surprised in the fact that there's a lot of chat. Every single time Man United lose a game, Ollie out trends on Twitter. So I thought the bookmakers might have him up there, but I would have him nowhere near it, to be honest with you. I think he has the full season at minimum at Manchester United. I just don't see a world Man United sack him early, especially after giving him that new contract. I think he's there to stay, whether United fans like it or not. And to be honest with you, I think he's earned at least a shot at a full season with his fully developed squad right now. So I'm not overly shocked from my perspective that he's not in there, but I can see why you might be.
You know what? We've got a new show coming out soon called Team Talk, where I think Joe kind of expands upon what you said a lot. And I actually do agree with a lot of your points you've said. I think it would be haphazardous to let him go at this point in the season. But he is that. Out of any club in the top 10, he's the manager who's got the highest odds to get the chop at the moment. So it is. Yeah, I think I just think he has to win a trophy this season. I think something has to give, and to lose to West Ham the manner he did in the League Cup is really disappointing. Champions League's been massively disappointing.
Tonight's game against Villarreal, man. Tonight's a huge game for him against Villarreal.
All right, well, people will be listening to this on a Thursday, so let's see how things have changed that on in. All right, well, we'll kick off with the manager most likely to get fired, according to the odds at the moment. Zach. I hate this. I hate to say it. Steve Bruce, Newcastle United. Do you really? I mean, they're 17th, just basically out of the relegation zone on goal difference. They have actually scored 7 times, which is more than I've realised.
Wow.
For researching this. But, you know, without St. Maximan and Callum Wilson, where would this club be?
Good
Do
God.
You think this is unfair, Zach, to have that Steve Bruce is getting this kind of crap again?
I kind of see both sides. Like, obviously the fans want him gone. The fans want him out of there. They don't enjoy the style of play he has at the club. Obviously the results show that things aren't going well. And I think if you're a Newcastle fan and you look at Steve Bruce and obviously you look at Mike Ashley, and that is the bigger problem, it is Mike Ashley. But if you're a Newcastle fan, you look at that and it's just like, good God, we're going to be in another relegation battle this year. We spent all of our money on one player who was never going to continue in the same form that we had him on loan last season in Joe Willock. We rely so much on Callum Wilson, who is injury prone as hell. Alan St. Maximan is the other star player, and he also doesn't have the best of injury records. I saw rumours today that apparently Liverpool and Chelsea are supposedly interested in him next summer, which would be disastrous for Newcastle if they didn't get a good enough fee for him. But then I also look at it and go, like, what more can Steve Bruce really do with the squad he's got? I'm not too sure who did the transfer business, whether it was him or more of a board decision to bring in Joe Willock. But to spend all that money, which wasn't a lot, to be quite fair, on one player when they need several kind of fixes around that squad. Obviously, Almiron seems to be hot and cold sometimes. He can be great one game and then have games in the next four matches. But it just seems like, yeah, I could see both sides. And I personally just... I don't see Newcastle sacking him this season unless they were to get relegated, and he wouldn't be the first manager, in my opinion, to go on this list.
Well, it's interesting what you say about the transfer business. I think Newcastle released that statement basically implying that there are too many players on bigger wages and they basically just didn't have the funds available, and they still like believed in the squad. So like, on that perspective, Joe, do you think this is a failure of the boardroom? Or do you think this is a failure for Steve Bruce? Because we've seen players like the Longstaff brothers, who are meant to have been these kind of big prodigal players, they've really struggled to sort of kick on in the last few seasons. Is that a failure of Steve Bruce or sort of Newcastle as a whole?
Both. Both the boardroom and the manager and the owner, obviously absolutely shambolic at Newcastle. The fans deserve an awful lot better. But as we're talking about the manager, we all know everybody's thoughts on sort of Mike Ashley's situation, don't we? So Steve Bruce, I think... I disagree with Zach. I think Steve Bruce will probably be chopped before the end of the season. I think his manner of playing football is so up and down. It's like we're looking at a team that's playing 5-3-2 consistently, one of the most conservative sides in the league, and they're shipping on average 2.5 goals a game. Like, it can't continue like that. His talent identification, okay, in some areas has been fine, but it feels so muddled. He's signing some players for this 5-3-2 system that he's bought in, and obviously wants to play because it supports the back three. But then the summer before that, he signed Jamal Lewis and he signed Ryan Fraser to play in a 4-3-3. Both left-sided players, can't get in the side now. So I don't understand his thinking towards the formation. I think it's way too conservative. I think there's a huge over-reliance, like Zach said, on Callum Wilson and Alan Sam Maximan. I think Newcastle fans deserve way better. There are better. I do think there are decent managers available on the market. And I think that Newcastle as a club should be in a way better position than trying to survive relegation every single season. So for me, I think Steve Bruce should be in and around the conversation as the top name on the chopping block.
All right, well, maybe at the end of this, we'll kind of rank our top three who are most likely to go. I don't know. I'm not sure what Steve Bruce is meant to be able to do with a lot of the players at his disposal. I don't know how much say he has over the transfers, as Zach was sort of implying earlier. And they are taking 14.2 shots per game, which is the seventh most. That's not to say that these are like quality chances. They are finding the net, but their defence is absolutely abysmal.
But then what? If the defence is so bad, like, are you not putting that down at all to the coaching system, despite the fact he's playing five at the back and two defensive midfielders?
Yeah. If they can't shut up shop, then yeah. No, I do agree with you in that sense. I don't know if you saw yesterday, but Mick McCarthy for Cardiff played five centre-backs in his game, and they conceded five goals, which is like a failure. And it looks like he's probably going to go. So yeah, maybe Steve Bruce. But I still think that he's been unfairly criticised during his time at the club, when I just think their squad is just one of the worst by a country mile. Like, Almiron is not very good. I mean, that's just the bottom line. He was signed from America. He hasn't been great there. But anyway, we'll move on to Nuno, because I think this is sort of like the big one. He's second next. Now, before we go into this, I got Danny Pape, one of our main editors at Football Daily and sort of big Spurs fan enthusiast. I asked him, what is your opinion on Nuno? And this is what he said. Where do I start? The guy looks completely out of his depth. It doesn't look like he has a game plan or plan B when things go wrong. And then he listed a whole load of reasons. He needs to play Ollie Skip next to Højbjerg. That's the only way to get Højbjerg to work as a box-to-box midfielder, which is what Nuno wants. Why has Romero only started once in the league? Serie A's best defender last season. He doesn't seem to know his best team. Keeps switching between Emerson and Tanganga at right back. Keeps trying to play too much on the counter. And then this. The biggest concern is that the players don't appear to be enjoying themselves or buying into his system. If we lose to Villa this weekend, I wouldn't be surprised if he was sacked.
God.
It's not great, is it? Zach, I mean, obviously won the first three games, manager of the month. It's got a bit up since then. What's your take on Nuno?
I think it's gone a little bit, maybe a bit too far. Like, I completely agree with Danny's points. I think he knows better than anyone about how bad it is at Spurs at the moment, especially watching that Arsenal game. Realistically, going into that Arsenal game, I think we probably would have all thought that Spurs were ahead of where Arsenal were. And then after that game, you look back and you think, well, actually, that doesn't seem the case. Arsenal looked pretty on it. They've essentially got the exact same. I think Arsenal lost their first three, whereas Spurs won their first three, and Spurs have lost their last three, and Arsenal won their last three. So they've kind of mirrored each other. But I think with Nuno, I can't see him getting sacked until maybe like January, if this form continues, if he can win some games. Obviously, he's played against the likes of Manchester City and won 1-0. Then he's played against the likes of Chelsea and kind of and lost 3-0 and got dominated. Obviously, Arsenal as well, another 3-0 loss, or 3-1 loss, I should say. But I don't think he is going to be sacked this year. I think they'll give him till after January. He obviously signed a short-term deal anyway for managers, only 2 years when he signed on. But you can kind of see the mess that is. The fact that he was Tottenham's, what, fifth choice or even lower? Yeah. You can kind of see that with how they are this season, how last-minute everything seems to have been. Obviously, Paratici has come in, and a lot of the signings are very much his signings. So no matter whether Nuno is there for come after January, it's very much about how Spurs kind of see their future going with those signings. They believe in them. And as you mentioned, you know, Romero, I think he's obviously had unfortunate dealings with the fact that he couldn't play him and all the Argentina stuff that happened, and him not arriving back in time and all that kind of stuff. It's also not been helped by the fact, obviously, Harry Kane has looked far from it. His body language has not been great, obviously, since the Manchester City deal that collapsed. And so Nuno, I think, came into Spurs with a lot to deal with, a lot on his plate, and it wasn't going to be easy for any manager, unless it might have been, say, Maurizio Pochettino or Antonio Conte, but they weren't going to join. And so, yeah, I think obviously it's not great, but I do kind of believe that everything has been kind of over the top, per se, over the top with how people have reacted to Nuno. And I kind of feel that, look, over the next month or so, he'll probably start winning his games again. And after the after his press conference, after the Arsenal game, he kind of like said, like, there are a few players here who need to step up. It kind of seemed as if he was like singling out Dele Alli, who had a very poor game, giving the ball away and maybe not doing enough in the defensive side of it. And so I think he needs to figure out his side. Obviously, as I said, he's had players return late. But I think it'll level itself out and it won't be as bad as maybe it is right now.
I mean, Danny, as Danny said, if they lose to Villa this weekend, he wouldn't be surprised if he was sacked. Joe, do you agree with that?
I think Zach's been kind there. I think Zach has been kind. I don't think Nuno will be... I think there are a few other names we're going to discuss that maybe are more advanced in the sacking thoughts, in my opinion, anyway. But I think Nuno's right up there. I think he is in a bit of bother here. I kind of agree with Danny. I think there's a real lack of identity under him. I'm not sure the fans particularly enjoy watching his football. The players don't seem to enjoy it. And I think that is always a real red flag when it comes to a manager, when the players seem disinterested and it's only been like six or seven games. I also think they've got horrible errors in that midfield. Like, I just don't think Nuno knows what his best side is. I think there's a lot of problems at Tottenham, to be honest with you. And Nuno might be being saved a little bit over the next month or so by the fact that Tottenham took so long to appoint him in the first place, that where do they turn? Like, it feels like a little bit like Tottenham have to have somebody lined up ready to go if Nuno was to be sacked. And they couldn't find anyone in the summer. Yeah. Has anything changed in that time period that means they found someone better suited than Nuno? I'm not sure. Nobody else has been sacked to open up for the role. So I think Nuno's definitely got that helping him. I think the pressure, though, Nuno is under is probably the most of any of the managers we're going to talk about. That Tottenham squad and the Tottenham fans are really, really not happy. I mean, they are playing such, but like, I think they are like third bottom in terms of expected points and expected goals. They're maybe 20th. They're taking like the least shots in the league. They are a hard watch, and I'm sure it's not the most enjoyable team to play in.
Yeah, they're conceding a lot of shots as well. The third worst in the entire Prem, which isn't really what we've expected from Spurs in the last few years, is it? I think Lucas Moura said that the team are really dissatisfied with sort of long ball tactics against Arsenal. Even Nuno came out and admitted that he got it wrong. It's a bit nerve wracking, but I wonder how sort of knee jerk reaction is. But I mean, just Joe, just more like Harry Kane, do you think he's being run under the bus by what is meant to be his best player? Because obviously Son stepped up, three goals this season so far. Yeah.
Not massively, because Nuno had no control over the Harry Kane situation when he arrived, did he? So obviously that has caused a significant hangover in the Premier League. And I have to say, I think Nuno, not that he's... like, he mustn't be worried about Harry Kane, because Harry Kane is obviously an exceptional player, but he's got to be willing to say to Harry Kane, look, you cannot keep dropping into these spaces that you're currently trying to occupy. And I wonder whether or not he feels confident enough to go in there and say that to Harry Kane. I'm sure he probably does behind the scenes, but I think it's really important he gets Harry Kane further up the pitch. But Harry Kane will start to improve when the midfield starts to improve. Honestly, the midfield is so empty that is the problem. I know that Harry Kane has started the season slowly, but he traditionally starts the season slowly. There was a period in his career where he had something called August syndrome. Do you remember when he didn't ever score in August? Yeah. So he always starts the season slowly. I would be much less concerned about Harry Kane than I am about the midfield and probably even the defence. The amount of shots it's shipping, Romero's lack of starts, the right back situation seems like a bit of a mess.
Oh, the situation is awful.
Like, I think Harry Kane, in my mind, is quite far down the list of problems for Tottenham Hotspur, even though he hasn't scored a goal.
On that midfield, Zach, you name checked Dele Alli earlier. I mean, he's, in my opinion, this is a make or break season for him. It literally has to go well this season, or I think his Spurs career is over, to be honest. Yeah. He's not been at the top level. Jose Mourinho clearly had a problem with him. I don't know if he actually improved that much under Ryan Mason, let's face it. I mean, and he's been really poor again this season. I can't see him getting anywhere near the England squad anytime soon whatsoever. I mean, do you think he's just almost finished, as it were, in that Tottenham Spurs midfield?
I think for Dele, I really do believe he needs to move elsewhere. He needs to be playing in his ideal position, which we saw was that season as like the second striker when he was, you know, a few years ago, and he killed it with that. And obviously since new managers have come in, they have also given him the benefit of doubt and played him that kind of role, and he's not necessarily performed to that level. And then he's tried out in midfield, and he's just not... It's not that he doesn't work hard enough, because I remember the game against Chelsea, there were times he was the last man back, putting in blocks, putting in great tackles. But he's maybe just not... I guess as he's grown up being this second striker, he's not necessarily thinking about, say, tracking back all the time or thinking about, okay, if I've given away this ball, I need to drop back into midfield to help them out. Like, if you think about the Arsenal first goal, I think, he loses the ball. And it's from that they go and score from. Nuno was definitely right to come out and say that he got it wrong, because there's no way that the only way the tactics that came out that he wanted to play long ball against Arsenal, which was weird from the off, was through him. It's what he would have told them to do, and it was completely wrong. I mean, Harry Kane is okay in the air, but he isn't a target man. And so I don't quite know what he was doing there. It feels at times like he's kind of just gone copy and paste on his tactics from Wolves and tried to put it onto Tottenham, and it's not quite worked. And who's surprised? It's completely different players. I think Danny's quite right in saying that Skip and Højbjerg have to play together. And that's probably when they've seen their best in midfield. Skip's still obviously very, very young, and he's going to be learning in the Premier League this season. And so he will probably not play every single game, that's understandable. But even in the Ndombele situation, like, I mean, and again, there's a lot of situations that kind of Joe mentioned that is a hangover from previous managers, from previous season. And Ndombele is another one with that. And I think, again, he's given him his chance against Arsenal to try and perform. And he was just kind of... He didn't do it. At times he was playing left wing and right wing, and realistically he needs to be in that midfield, because Ndombele is a very, very talented player, and when he's on his day he can be the best player on that pitch. And maybe with a midfield of Skip and Højbjerg who do a bit more of the defensive work, that can work out for him. But there's a lot of things that he needs to fix, and the midfield is definitely one of them.
All right, well, I think we'll get Danny Pape and maybe Sonny Snelling to do a How to Fix Spurs podcast down the line. I enjoyed Pat and George's moan about Arsenal for a good hour the other day. But if we park that, we'll move on to Watford. Because this is the third worst odds to get sacked at the moment. Best odds to get sacked at the moment, sorry. Zisco, Watford. I'm actually amazed to see him on this list. And the only thing I can think about Yeah, I am. I mean, 1-2, drawn 1, lost 3.
That's not the reason he's on it.
The history of the club.
Yeah, the only reason I can assume he's here is because the Pozzo family are just mental when it comes to our... Kike Sanchez Flores has already got his bags packed and ready. He's just waiting for the caller to come back. But, like, surely, Joe, he's done enough to not be in the top three managers most likely to be fired at this point.
Yeah, of course, but you've got to remember the bookies are setting these odds because of not just on-the-pitch factors from the last six game weeks. Like, Watford are the most trigger-happy club, arguably, in Europe, or amongst it anyway. At least they were last time they were in the Premier League. Let's not forget how many managers they went through one season. Was it 5? And they re-bought back one once as well? I think... Zisco has started the season really well. Watford look a handful, especially on the counter-attack with the pace of Saar and Emmanuel Dennis. I think the midfield is pretty decent, to be honest with you. I know that they had that injury to Kuka, which probably is going to set them back a little bit. But, you know, Atebo seems like he's come in, hit the ground running, playing really well. I think they're going to be absolutely, like, fine to watch. They will be in and around the relegation zone. And Zisco, I think, has the issue of Watford only ever being 3 losses away from the board going, get ready, get ready. It's coming. That's the reason he's in there. I agree with you. He probably shouldn't be third, but that feels like a hangover from past experiences with this Watford board.
Oh, I mean, what, Zach, what even like constitutes success for Watford this season? Is it just staying up, or are they expecting?
Of course.
But are they expected to like push on into the top half of the table? Because surely
what?
No. This I'm talking about from like the owner's perspective. So at the moment they're in 12th position.
Mate, the owners are happier staying up. No, the Watford owners are not thinking they're getting into the top 10. What are you talking about?
You're missing my point here. My point is like, why is he even? Surely anything in, as long as he keeps their nose above the relegation zone, there should be no reason for him to be remotely in a position of being fired.
I get what you mean. I think the issue with the Watford owners is they see, say, if they see, say, 3 losses on the bounce, 4 losses on the bounce, they think, okay, is this going to continue? If it is, obviously we want to stay in the Premier League. Can we get in a manager who's going to make sure that happens? Do we fully believe in how Sisco's playing, et cetera, et cetera? And I think actually the way he's playing his football, I think he has a bit of, to use the Daniel Fark term, credit in the bank, with the owners, maybe more so than the previous managers that are there. Obviously, he was fantastic during the Watford season, the Championship last year. But yeah, I think for Sisco, it's not as bad as the bookies are making it out. But again, like if he lost 4 games in a row, I really wouldn't be surprised with the Watford board. The one that I actually think probably should be higher is Daniel Fark. I think obviously with him having lost every single game so far, and it should be said that he has played Liverpool, he has played Manchester City, but he's also lost to Watford, which is a game that realistically on the calendar they'll be looking and saying we should try and be getting 3 points from here. And as I said earlier, he used to quote that he has credit in the bank with the club after guiding them to the Premier League, back to the Premier League twice. But I think at least with the first time, and it's worth being said, it's still early on in the season, this can change, of course. But at least with the first time, it felt like they were unlucky. They were playing a brand of football that people enjoyed to watch. They were, you know, risking, they were there till the end of the season. But it felt as if they were unfortunate to maybe go down that time. Whereas at the moment, with the way they're playing and the way their games are going, I don't quite feel like that as I did maybe 2 seasons ago. If the season ended now and they got relegated, obviously there's still so many games left. I wouldn't be as surprised. It doesn't seem like they've got... And it's also worth saying as well, they have had injuries too. So once those players come back, maybe things, the tide will change and things will change with them and their form in the league. But yeah, I'm really a bit surprised with maybe him coming out and saying that statement. But also, I guess at the same time, he's not going to come out and be like, yeah, so much pressure on me, I could get sacked in 3 games.
I mean, yeah, they are awful, to be honest, aren't they? 2 goals scored, 16 conceded. I mean, Mila Rashitska, he's been terrible. No goal involvement since he's come in there. The Greek winger, Zolis, when he gets up to speed, I think he'll be pretty effective. But I mean, Joe, losing Emi Buendia just looks to have almost killed them going forward. Do you not think?
Yeah, I mean, we've got to also, let's put into a bit of context. They've had maybe the hardest fixtures of any side in the league so far this season as well. They've played Liverpool, Man City, Leicester, Arsenal, Everton, who are obviously on fire as well. The big red flag, obviously, that Watford 3-1 loss at home, which was a terrible, terrible result for Daniel Fark. So yeah, I agree, he probably should be in and around here. But I think Norwich... we are going to see an uplift probably over like the next 6 weeks, and people will be like, well, where's this come from, Norwich? Well, they're not playing the top 8 sides like every week like they are at the moment. That Watford result, though, like I said, big red flag. And I think Norwich fans were very, very dismayed at that performance. Defensively, they look so suspect. But Emi Buendia losing a player of that calibre, it is almost impossible to replace if you're Norwich. Yep. Like, you're not going to be able to buy a creator that puts up that many chances in the Championship or the Premier League. So I feel a little bit sorry for Daniel Fark, but I agree. I think he had the backing of the fans massively last time he was in the Premier League, even when things were going horribly wrong. He brought them back up, and he probably does have a bit of credit in the bank to bring them... to see him stay longer than other managers in this list. So I think he might be under pressure come about January, but I think he's got enough credit to survive until Christmas.
You say they've had a really tough start, which is completely true. But then if we look at the, I mean, who realistically can you see them beating? Obviously they face Burnley next. That is a must win game.
Yeah.
And then they've got Brighton, Chelsea, Leeds and Brentford. And to be honest, I don't look at, other than maybe Leeds, who haven't actually had the best start to the new season, I don't look at those games and think they're picking up a massive amount of points in any of these whatsoever, let alone wins. I mean,
they don't have to win four of them, do they? They just have to maybe win one, draw one, and they're suddenly in a much better position. Like, obviously, I agree with you. I think Norwich probably are going to go down. If I could go back and redo my predictions, I would swap them and Brentford, very obviously. But I think he might have enough credit in his bank that if he's at Christmas with 15 points... like, he probably will still be in a job.
I don't know. I disagree, but only time will tell. All right, Zach, next up is Arteta, the biggest seesaw manager in terms of, opinion on
how's he in this list?
I don't know. I mean, one week he should be, one week he shouldn't. It really makes, it's just crazy. I mean, do you really think, we don't have to talk about him too long, because I'm pretty bored of him, to be honest, but I mean, do you think Arteta deserves to be here?
Based on his previous results this season, yeah, probably about this, maybe a little bit lower. Maybe this is slightly too high, but I mean, considering after the Brentford game, things were really bad, really really bad, and then there was the City game, and things were even worse, and then there was the Chelsea game, and it felt really like if he didn't win his next three, things could be he could be getting the chop. But he did go and win them, and as you said, I think seesaw is a very good way to put it. But I think also Arsenal fans, after obviously beating Spurs 3-1 and the youth kids doing fantastically well, and kind of coming out of it feeling like there was something. I mean, the second goal in particular was really really nice, obviously coming from the keeper, maybe a little bit lucky with it, and then some great play and a counter attack. Sure, brilliant goal. But I think their next games are going to be where we really kind of see him kind of earn his money here. Obviously playing Brighton, playing Crystal Palace, playing Villa, Leeds, Leicester, Watford. So those six games are huge for him. If he can come out of them and maybe having lost just one, maximum two, I think he'll be okay. If it goes the other way round, though, and he's only won two out of those six, he'll probably be shooting back up. As we said, this seesaw kind of way. I think that's a perfect analogy to kind of describe Mikel Arteta. But with what I saw against Spurs, I kind of back him to kind of keep going now on a climbing trajectory. Because I was really impressed with them against Tottenham, and I hope for at least, I guess, the sake of Arsenal fans, you know, personally I don't care, but for Arsenal fans, it continues to kind of carry on this way.
I've honestly seen him being labelled as the biggest mistake one week, and then the next Wenger the week
later.
That's
the thing, though, when you're at the Arsenal job, and obviously after the kind of mess that happened with Unai Emery and then Mikel Arteta and how he started this season, started his career with them, won them the FA Cup, then didn't even get any kind of European football. And so, like, it is very kind of one... He has this great positive and then has one major negative. And so I'm not too surprised that it feels like this every kind of week.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I mean, if we look at Bruno Lage over at Wolves, they 1-2, lost 4. Expected points suggest they should be 7th or 9.85 points. All of their forwards... and not scoring as much as they should have. They should have scored 9.5 times, when in reality they've only scored 3. I mean, when you hear that, it is actually... It does sound like it is quite promising early days for him. I think it's maybe unfair that he's here. I think every new manager deserves a year to at least kind of get to grips with what he's doing. And as we can already see that he's trying to move away from perhaps some of the negative football that we saw under Nuno at Wolves, perhaps more conservative football we saw there. I think this could be a bit like a sort of Graham Potter's first season at Brighton. He just needs a year to really let his methods bed in before we start to see it all come together. But I mean, it already looks fairly promising early doors. Raúl Jiménez back on the score sheet. I mean, what's your take on Bruno Lage?
Yeah, I think Bruno Lage has started the season pretty well. And obviously the bookies don't base their rankings on expected goals and underlying numbers and stuff like that, do they? They base it quite obviously. And obviously Wolves, points-wise, slightly underwhelming. And Bruno Lage is a new face through the door. So you can see why they put one and one together and come up with those odds. But I agree with you. I think Wolves are playing some pretty attractive football. I think the fans are happy to finally see some attacking displays, not just sort of rigid, structured counter-attacking football like it was under Nuno, as successful as he was at Wolves. Obviously, back-to-back seventh place finishes. If Bruno can get anywhere near that, then he's done a really good job. But I just think if Wolves can finish an improvement even on their 13th place last season, I think they hit 45 points, didn't they? If he can get to 50 points and can be in around 10th, that's a huge dub for him and a huge dub for Wolves, because it's a very different way of playing. They've also got Pedro Neto still to come back, who we know is massive. Probably one of their best players. And if Adama Traore can finally start finding that final ball and scoring some goals to add to those 10 dribbles a game he's putting up at the moment, then they're going to be absolutely fine. Yeah, I agree, Bruno Lage probably shouldn't be on the list for me.
All right. I agree with you too. Ralf Hasenhüttl, Zach, the final one.
Should probably be higher.
An explosive finish. Yeah, he's coming at seventh in the bookies. I agree with you. Should be high. Why do you think he should be higher, Zach?
The games have been shit, to be quite honest. I thought, obviously, having lost Danny Ings, bringing in Adam Armstrong was a great signing. Then bringing in Brozier as kind of the third striker to sit on the bench on loan from Chelsea was also really good. However, the football they're playing has not been fantastic. I'm trying to think off the top of my head who they've played so far, if there's been any major games. I think, did they play City? I can't.
Is this Southampton?
United.
Yeah, Southampton. Yeah.
They also played United, Everton.
So there you go.
West Ham.
Yeah, okay. And against West Ham, they got the draw. And obviously, their next four games is Chelsea, Leeds, Burnley, Watford. You don't expect them to beat Chelsea. I mean, they did last year, twice, I think, as well. So who knows, maybe. but Leeds, Burnley, Watford, if they can kind of pick up results there, 9 points from those four games would be unreal. And I think maybe then Ralf Hasenhüttl would be probably seventh is the right place. But based off of what's currently happened, I would have expected him to be higher with so many losses. But I guess Southampton kind of know they have a really good manager here, and obviously based on his history as someone that can do really well for them. And obviously having lost, as we mentioned earlier, Danny Ings, it's always going to be a tough season, this one. And so really, if they were to sack him, I'd be quite surprised, because I don't quite know who they'd bring in at the same level to replace him. But I mean, Southampton, a majority of the time in their Premier League, they've always made the right decision.
That's it, Joe. Like, I mean, are there managers out there who would get a better performance out of this squad of players at this set of time at Southampton? Or is Hasenhüttl really just doing the best that he can with sort of a fairly hit and miss squad at times?
It's an interesting one, though, isn't it? Because Hasenhüttl said at the start of the season he was delighted with the Sowen business. The board had done a great job. It's the best squad he's ever had at Southampton.
No.
So I think quotes like that say to me that he is maybe happier than we think with that squad. And I think the board will probably be saying, well, okay, you said you were very happy with these signings. You've come out and said this is the best squad we've had, and we are not performing particularly well. We're not picking up points. He obviously survived the 2-0, which not many other managers in the league would do, I think it's fair to say. But yeah, I suppose it does come down to who's available. I think Ralf Hasenhüttl should be higher up the list considerably, though. I think him and Nuno, as well as like Steve Bruce for me, probably one as like the most choppable, I think. I think, to be honest with you, Ralf and Nuno not miles off it. I think that Nuno obviously has the pressure of Spurs, but Ralf Hasenhüttl has the kind of recovery at the moment of not having any very clear replacements available. And like you said, can Southampton go out and find a better manager than Ralf Hasenhüttl? Probably not right now. So that's helping him in a big way.
All right. I mean, well, but just before I ask Zach his three, I think way too much emphasis is put on the 9-0 defeats. I really do. Like, they always bounce back from those either side. I think you can take these like anomaly freak results. Obviously, the fact that it happened twice is unbelievable. Yeah, concerning.
Yeah.
But I don't think they've ever been like destroyed either around that to the same extent. I think way too much emphasis is placed on those nil defeats. It's like one-off results. But anyway, Zach, who are your top three replacements? I'll be intrigued to see top three sort of to be fired. I'll be intrigued to see if they differ with Joe.
Having now gone through the list, I actually probably would keep Steve Bruce at number one. I think when I first started it, I didn't quite think about it as much as maybe I should have, and he can stay number one. For me, number two would probably be Daniel Farke. As I mentioned, if his run, obviously now facing Burnley, Brighton, not Chelsea, Leeds and Brentford, if he can't maybe pick up some draws and try and get a win against Burnley, things won't be looking too great for him, so I'll have him second. And then I guess really looking at the list, it's either Sisco or Nuno for me. I just wouldn't be surprised with Watford. I really wouldn't if they were to kind of go four on the bounce, and even though I believe they shouldn't, but I wouldn't be surprised if the board was just to cut their losses and try and go for a new project or a new manager to make sure they stay in the Premier League, even though probably keeping Sisco would keep them in the Premier League. And as for Nuno, I guess it's if things don't change very quickly, then yeah, he could be sacked. But I back him personally to change things and pick up some results.
Mm. All right, I'm going for Farke, Hasenhüttl, Nuno, Bruce. That's my top four, I think. But anyway, what do you guys think?
I like how you've gone four.
Yeah, well, I think they're the four main contenders. I think Arteta, Bruno Lage, Zisco. I think they'll be all right for now. But anyway, let's wait and see. Who do you guys think at home might get the chop first out of all of these? Who's the most under pressure? Let us know down in the comments, as always. Zach, what are you working on Snapchat at the moment?
Lots of things. Daily stories. They always change. Some about Ronaldo, some about Messi, and some about every other footballer around the world. If you guys want to stay up to date with it, then head over to Snapchat, type in Football Daily in the search bar, and you can get daily content from us.
Love it. Something about every footballer around the world. Don't say we don't keep you covered. Joe, anything to add from you?
Not too much, to be honest with you, mate. Not too much my end. Obviously, check out Snapchat. Check out We Need to Talk if you haven't already. And look out for the new show that we shot, because it is going to be a banger, I think.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of sitting next to Joe, which is an experience I don't want to repeat anytime soon. All right, thank you very much for listening. Make sure you like and subscribe to the Extra Time Podcast channel. Get involved in the comments below, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.